campaign contributions to Senator Alphonse D'Amato, who sponsored legislation that kept saccharin on the market. Saccharin, a key ingredient of Sweet and Low, had been found to cause cancer. In the end, Marvin cut a deal with prosecutors, testifying for the government and keeping himself out of prison. In other words, Uncle Marvelous turned rat. I start this story at the Metropolitan Club on Manhattan's Upper East Side, where my cousin Jeffrey, the oldest son of the oldest son, the scion of the third generation, is getting married for the second time. Jeffrey, a burned-out surfer, a bloodshot member of the high school class of 78, whose yearbook picture still tells the story, is earmarked to inherit the empire. If Jeffrey read more widely, he would know that he is fated to screw the pooch, lose his grip, open his hands, and let the money blast back into the whirlwind. Or I start with Uncle Ira, the youngest son of Ben and Betty, a vice president of the company who controls 49% of the stock. Ira, who has always struck me as an extreme eccentric, is years younger than his siblings, a pampered, interesting kid who grew into a genuine nut, a man who carries a purse, wears sandals, follows whims, sports an unruly red beard, and lives in an East Side townhouse with his wife and many cats. Ira has been to his office at the factory just twice in the last 10 years, though he says he works many hours a day from home via phone and fax. He is the trick fate played on Empire, the inscrutable brother who has to be watched. At Jeff's wedding, he approached me in the bathroom. Standing next to me at the urinal, he said, "What's the last thing you want to hear your crazy uncle say to you in the bathroom?" "What? Nice dick." My brother starts the story in Flatbush, in the icebox chill room of my Aunt Gladys, a woman who, for mysterious reasons, had not been out of the house, her childhood home where she still lived with Ben and Betty, in almost 30 years. I once heard a politician describe a rival's tax scheme as the crazy aunt hiding in the attic, and I said to myself, she actually lives on the ground floor. Whenever I asked what was wrong with Aunt Gladys, why she never left her room, words were muttered about arthritis, psoriasis, lack of confidence. Even though she is the least physically active of the Eisenstadt siblings, Gladys, with her telephone, drives the action of the story. In a way I am still trying to fathom, Gladys is its protagonist. When I was briefing my brother-in-law on his new family and told him that Gladys had not left the house since the Nixon administration, he said, "You mean mostly she stays in the house, but now and then she leaves the house to go to the store?" I said, "I mean mostly she stays in her room, but now and then she leaves her room to go to the bathroom." As I mentioned, my aunt's room, for reasons I still do not understand, is kept as cold as a meat locker. To this day, if we are in a movie theater or a mall where the AC is really cranking, my brother will say, "It's like Aunt Gladys's room, it's so cold in here." By which we know him to mean more than just the temperature. Gladys's room is where my brother, Stephen, learned the nature of things. Once a week, before I was born, my brother and sister were taken to Flatbush to visit their grandparents, aunts, and cousins. There was an ancient form of primogeniture at play in the family. As the son of the oldest son, cousin Jeffrey was golden. One week, Grandma Betty decided that a grandchild would, for no particular reason, have a party thrown in his or her honor, complete with cake and gifts. While standing in my aunt's room, Betty wrote the names on a slip of paper and dropped the slips in a hat. A winner was drawn. Jeffrey. Since Jeffrey seemed to win many such contests, my brother grew suspicious. When he picked up the hat, Betty said, "Don't look." Unfolding the slips, he had the great early shock of his life. Every ballot was marked Jeffrey. Later, when my brother refused to follow some instruction, Ben led him upstairs and spanked him. A grandfather who spanks. Ending, for my brother, the sweet ignorance of childhood. In 1995, when my grandfather collapsed in the hospital, the first relative on the scene was my brother. In a nice twist of fate, Stephen found himself charged with making life and death decisions for the man who had helped him recognize the unfairness of the world. And the winner is Jeffrey. In the months following Ben's collapse,